Support for the Radio West podcast comes from Harmon's Grocery, committed to excellent service and friendly smiles. Your food is our passion.
Political parties are more than a brand. They're an institutional force. At their core, they're about values and principles, but for them to work, they also have to be about infrastructure and organization. Political consultants Gabby Finlayson and Jackie Morgan know that you need something that's consistent and reliable, like a network that can translate these abstract visions into real votes. You need a ground game that shows up. You need to make phone calls to get people to the polls. Finlayson and Morgan are Democrats who help candidates get elected. They've worked in other places, but these days they're focused on Utah, where they both grew up. A few years ago, they started a consulting company called Elevate Strategies. And one thing they learned early on, politics is about ideals, sure. It's also about operations, yes, but sometimes it's just about solving a problem. You'll hear Jackie first.
It was 2022, and we had a lot of really important elections going on. And, you know, there were a lot of organizations and a lot of groups who were putting in a lot of important work. But what we found was there was a lot of new staff that had come into the campaign world and needed training.
Yeah. Everyone should have the same understanding of the basic structure of knocking on doors and how do you, you know, recruit people to come volunteer and how do you have good conversations with voters in an authentic way? How can you best support the candidate that you're working with? Those aren't often things that people are taught, but like that shouldn't be how the world works. Like we should help people and give them as much information as we possibly can. That's how we've always operated.
And we've all worked on separate campaigns across the country, and we all had various training decks from all of the work we've done. We had 100 PowerPoints that we were trying to combine into one. And so we all sat down, took our various training decks to see which content was the best to be able to do this training. And we got a venue. We had to go buy a projector.
And we had a bunch of people that wanted to come, like 30 people.
But after we had prepared for all of the things, we realized that we didn't have enough chairs for all the people that were coming when we went through the RSVP list the night before.
As campaign people, we often feel like we're professional problem solvers. You got to have a backup plan to your backup plan. We got to figure it out. And so immediately, like, jumped into action. Let's figure out what to do.
If you can't solve the problem, nobody's going to solve it for you, so you better figure it out.
And is the whole philosophy of our company. Someone's got to solve this problem.
So we called everybody that we knew who could potentially have enough chairs for us to borrow for this training.
The Utah Democratic Party.
The Quality Utah.
The unions.
Yeah.
The Salt Lake County Party. I think we called Planned Parenthood. I don't know. We called a bunch of people. And no one had enough chairs.
Mm-hmm. And so we started doing what we do and looked on Facebook Marketplace for...
Shout out.
for some folding chairs, and we found a listing for some very dirty back of somebody's garage used folding chairs.
You know the white ones, the white plastic ones, metal legs, plastic back, that one. So, reached out, they're like, yeah, sure, you can have these folding chairs, whatever. It was a company that I think did like both weddings and like they had a bunch of like circus stuff too. I don't know what it was, but God bless them.
So we bought the chairs and it was the first company money that we spent.
It kind of became, for our first year of our company, a bit of our philosophy for us, right? If you want to get people in the room, sometimes you're going to be the one that needs to bring the chairs and help people show up. And on the one-year anniversary of buying those chairs, we all got matching chair tattoos.
For so long in Utah, there haven't been competitive elections. Republicans have had control of every branch of government. And so when we came into the state, we really wanted to professionalize the way that people worked on campaigns in the entire experience.
We know that the impacts and the outcomes of the type of policies that we're seeing coming out of both the federal government and the state government are serious. And I think Democrats don't want to say the wrong thing. And oftentimes I think that can lead to people wanting to be told what to do or what's the best polling message or how do I tailor my experience or my, you know, vision for the state to fit the district and the things that people will want to hear. When in reality, we know that if a candidate is changing what they actually believe, people can tell. Like, it's not going to be authentic.
That's why we end up feeling so passionately about our work and the races that we're working on, is because, you know, we really know exactly why people are in this work, and the candidates that we work for are in it for all the right reasons. And we want to make sure that we are sharing those reasons with the district and the voters, rather than trying to tailor them to say the right thing or to, you know, do the right thing so that, you know, voters are going to understand that this person's moderate enough or that this person is progressive enough to pass this test, but to really be authentic.
Voters are all looking for the same thing. And at the end of the day, I think those things are, do I trust you? And no policy proposal is going to bring that person over to you. It's going to be your story. Are you authentic? Are you true to yourself? And can we trust you to fight for the things that we care about?
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're continuing a conversation we started last week about the future of Utah's Democratic Party. Democrats have been trying to figure out how to be relevant again in a state where they haven't seen a viable statewide candidate in nearly 30 years. They recently held their party convention. They chose a new leader. It's the party stalwart Brian King. He was on the show last week. But this time we wanted to spend some time with Finlayson and Morgan. They have a sharp and biting social media presence, but they also think a lot about campaign maneuvers. And they've been making this case that Utah is primed for a political shift. With the right ground game, with the right candidates, maybe even the right message, they believe Democrats could find a way back to relevance. Jackie Morgan has worked in state politics for more than 10 years. She's served as campaign manager or senior advisor to nearly 30 local candidates. Gabby Finlayson has also worked on political campaigns in Utah and across the country, including on the presidential campaign of Pete Buttigieg and President Joe Biden's general election race. We'll hear from Jackie first.
We grew up here, we worked in politics, we left, and we did national work, and then we moved back. A lot of times, if you have any sort of talent or you work in political campaigns, you never come back. We came back here because we care about it. We care about Utah. We have a real passion and a love and a real desire to change the way our state looks. And we joke that we're missionaries because we go to a lot of conferences and we are just hitting our talking points, convincing people that Utah is the place that they should be involved and be excited about. There's not a lot of places left on the map for us to expand to, for us to be able to flip states. And so to have a place where people have hope and have optimism and feel like we can make a difference here, they get excited about that and then they want to get on board and they want to get involved.
But do they believe you? Because the idea that Utah is somehow going to be a battleground state, let's be honest, sounds preposterous to a lot of people.
Yeah, it certainly does. I think it's not just about us convincing people or making them feel like things are possible, but, you know, we're giving people data and information and actual facts about where the state is going. And, you know, if you would have told someone 2 decades ago that Colorado would have been a blue state, or, you know, that Arizona would have two Democratic senators, or that Georgia would have two Democratic senators, they wouldn't have believed you either. And it's not just about believing harder, it's about working harder and showing people where the trends are actually moving. And not just waiting for those trends to manifest in outcomes, but by investing in them and making sure that they actually come to fruition.
So your answer to when people say, are you out of your minds, is, hold on, let me show you the data. Let me show you why we believe this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We'll get to that, the particulars here in a second. Let me ask you to make your own. You guys have been in politics for a while. What is the current condition of the Utah Democratic Party?
This is a very good question. I think, you know, we tend to talk a lot about how people view the Democratic Party and what it is supposed to be and what people assume it to be. And that being very different from what the actual structure of what the party is. And, you know, like Jackie mentioned, we have worked in, you know, 10, 12 different states across the country. And in every single state that is competitive or even a blue state, the Democratic Party itself does not necessarily play a massive role in electoral politics. That's not what its job is. And so all that to say, you know, the Democratic Party right now, I think, is in a bit of a restructuring, one could say. And, you know, it's like any other.
Wait, are you saying that there is the idea, the ideology of being a Democrat and the just on the ground infrastructure of being a Democrat?
Yeah, they're absolutely different things. And I think also what, you know, a normal voter assumes the Democratic Party is or should be, or how much influence it has, is very different from the mechanism that it is supposed to operate in.
Yeah, the organization of the Democratic Party is like a business. It's an organization. It has staff. It has a budget. It has, you know, an office. It has things that it needs to get done. It is not necessarily spending all of its time thinking about the platform or what Democrats are talking about. It's an actual business that needs investment. It needs, you know, a leader. It needs staff on the ground to do it. So the Utah Democratic Party as an organization or as a business right now is, you know, we're understaffed, we're underfunded, and it, as an organization, is not functioning properly, which then translates to the broader sort of ideology and what people think of as they identify as a Democrat, as that brand. Huh.
So you're saying the ideas are good, the business model right now is crappy.
Yes.
Who inspired you over the years as you developed your ideas for politics? And maybe talk about both things, that is, the people who might have inspired the way you think strategically about the on-the-ground work, but also the sort of more soaring rhetoric that you got from political figures who made you feel like, I want to devote my life to these ideals.
I know Gabby has a good answer for this, I feel like.
Which one? Sorry, what answer?
Catherine Cortez Masto.
Oh, yeah. I guess, yes, I do have a few that come to mind for sure. Yeah, so I had worked in local politics here in Utah, and I liked it. I thought it was very fun. It's very fast-paced. It's a lot of immediate gratification, you know, persuading one voter or, you know, having one great debate, whatever it is. But I did do an internship in the United States Senate for Democratic Senator from Nevada, Catherine Cortez Masto, and got a couple of opportunities to sit down with her and really ask her real questions. A lot of the other interns were, you know, asking her about policy and, you know, how things get done and the structure. And she looked at me and she asked if I had a question for her. And I said, this was in 2019, right after the longest government shutdown at the time. And was really fascinated by the way that she's still able to work with these people that she is so ideologically different from. And that, she, you know, there are things that are said every day that are so offensive. And so I asked her how she was able to work with these people. And she kind of stopped and said, you have to find common ground where you can and hold your ground where you can't. I think that is very much the way that we approach politics, because we know that in a super minority party, in a supermajority state, it's nice to have people that you agree with 100%. And a lot of people tend to still want to have these purity tests and are you the right kind of Democrat? But we have to build unexpected coalitions in order to make progress. And that doesn't mean that you compromise on the ground that, you know, you want to stand firm on. But it does mean that you have to find common ground without compromising on your values, which is a lot of what we talk with our candidates about.
I didn't want to put you on the spot with that question, by the way, and I should have sort of warned you that was coming. But
no,
that was
okay.
A really good answer. But Jackie, was there anything that comes to mind for you?
Yeah. So in 2020, I was working for a national education advocacy organization. I was national campaigns director. And I was working with hundreds of school board candidates across the country. And it was in the middle of the anti-CRT Moms for Liberty movement. And I had just all of these incredible candidates running for school board who are parents, who were teachers, who had real other day jobs, and they were running for school board for the right reasons, because they wanted to make a difference in their kids' education. And they got wrapped up in this national rhetoric and all of these culture war issues, and we had to navigate it in different ways. It was this real embodiment of, you know, what's actually happening on the ground, what's impacting people's day-to-day life, their kids getting the bus to school and the school bus route changing and not being able to pick their kids up. And that impacts their every day, rather than talking about these culture war issues. And it was really cool to be able to see just you know, in so many different small cases, that being played over and over and over again. And I think we see that a lot in local politics now, where, you know, the things that are actually impacting our day-to-day lives or Utahns' day-to-day lives aren't the big culture war issues. They're not the things that Trump is talking about. And, you know, our Republicans love to tout that we're the number one economy in the country. But if people don't actually feel that, if their wallets, you know, don't feel that, if they can't buy groceries, then none of that matters. And so speaking to voters on the issues that really matter and seeing those local issues is really how we try and approach our work.
Both of those stories have the same theme, it seems, and that is, although I don't want to oversimplify it, but it seems like it's don't let the perfect be the enemy of the what could be really good.
Yes. Yeah.
Is that right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Gabby has that tattooed.
Is that right?
I do.
No way.
Yeah,
sort of.
I do. Yes. It says good things well and great things. And yeah, that's very much how my ideology about politics is. If you are trying to focus on doing great things, you're focused on the legacy, you're focused on the power, you're never going to get there. And you should be far more focused on doing good things well. And those doing good things well will lead to great things.
Okay. This may sort of change your answer to this question because I'm starting to get a sense of where you're coming from. But I did want to know what you think happened in 2024. Like, how did Democrats blow it? And there are a lot of different answers to it. One is, look, sorry, it was just a terrible economy, or at least people perceived that it was a bad economy. And there was inflation, which was real, and no one reacted to that. There was the idea that there wasn't enough time for Kamala Harris to really put together a decent campaign. Democrats were more focused on sort of, you know, the outrageousness of Donald Trump and what was wrong there, as opposed to making a positive case for what they were doing right. That's one. The other one, of course, is that they were a little too focused on identity politics and culture war issues. Do you come down on which of those it might be? It sounds like you might be concerned that they didn't focus on the right issues, more on culture, less on what can I do for a working family or mm-hmm. whatever.
Yeah, I think very broadly, Democrats and progressives, we tend to, when things don't go our way, blame everybody else. Voters were racist. The voters were sexist. It was the Comey letters. It was Joe Rogan, right? It's everything else. It was never what we did wrong. It's that everyone else just doesn't get it. You know, it is a microcosm of the problem that the Democratic Party has had for decades, which is we are moving into this elitism, not only in the way that we operate as far as, you know, donors and money and politics and insider trading, whatever it is, right? But I think between blaming everybody else for not being as smart as we are or we think that we are, we also haven't been really honest about taking accountability, because Democrats love to say that we are standing up for marginalized communities, that we're helping working class families, that we want to, you know, make people's lives better. And for better or for worse, like we haven't done that. Even when we, you know, Biden passed a lot of great policies and did a lot of investment, and that's great. But we have to actually be willing to be accountable for the people that we've let down. And I think we also are stuck in this, you know, trying to say all the right things and use the right language and be a part of the identity politics in so much that we will not offend people and we can try and keep them in our coalition. And yet we don't deliver for those communities. We always assume that if we say the right things that they'll be with us, when in reality, I think it is actually more insulting and, you know, offensive to those communities that we claim to help when we don't actually show up for them and we kind of paint them with a broad brush. I mean, oh, well, we need to talk to, you know, Latino communities about immigration because that's obviously the top issue. Or we need to talk to, you know, LGBTQ voters about, you know, trans rights or women about reproductive rights. When in reality, what we should be talking about and focusing on are those issues that affect every single community, you know, like the economy, like what are people's actual economic outcomes and personal economic outlooks, instead of trying to focus on these macroeconomic trends that don't actually translate into the lives of the people that we claim to support.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm not going to claim to like be another pundit and pick a reason why we lost, because I think it's a combination of all of them. I think all of it is true. And to Gabby's point, you know, we didn't do it right. We messed up, and we never take accountability for that. And I think what voters are looking for is some honesty and some authenticity from people, from politicians, from a political party. And we're not getting that from either side right now, which is why people are so frustrated. And, you know, the Democratic Party used to be the party of the working people. It used to be where, you know, we all came together under one big tent. And right now the Democratic Party is looking more like an HR department of a company, you know, policing people's language and, you know, not being progressive enough or, you know, having purity tests. And we are missing the point of actually talking to people about the things that they value and that are important to them. And we need more of that. We need more everyday people talking to everyday people.
And I think we're forgetting, too, honestly, the reason that even more people in 2024 than in, you know, 2020 or 2016 voted for Trump again. And I think a lot of that does have to do with, one, like, people know that he isn't always telling the truth, but at least he sounds like he's giving them something that sounds real. He sounds like them. He talks like they do. And even though he was the president of the United States, he is still seen as an anti-establishment candidate. And Democrats tend to get stuck in this, well, we need to defend the institutions because it's so important. And, you know, we have to defend democracy and whatever that looks like. But every single day, voters are not thinking about democracy. They're not thinking about norms. And as long as we are stuck in this cycle of defending institutions that have not served people, we are going to continue to lose ground with everyday people.
That's Gabby Finlayson and Jackie Morgan. They're senior partners of the local political consulting firm Elevate Strategies. You can find their social media content on Instagram and TikTok at Elevate_Utah. Take a break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West.
Support for the Radio West podcast comes from Harmon's Grocery, committed to excellent service and friendly smiles. Your food is our passion.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're continuing our conversation about the future of Utah's Democratic Party. We have with us two political consultants who are known for their sharp social media presence, where they call out what they see as overreach and political missteps by conservative Utah lawmakers. But their focus goes way beyond online posts. They're also deep into the nuts and bolts of campaign tactics, and they've been making the case that Utah could be on the brink of a political turnaround. All you need is the right organization, the right candidates, and a message that resonates. They're truly convinced Democrats can rebuild in this state and compete again. Okay, let's talk about what you're seeing in Utah. So one thing we need to say, I think, up front, on at least at this point, is that Democrats have, before you even get to ideas, a structural disadvantage because of the way maps, political maps, have been drawn. But if those maps were drawn fairly, what would Utah look like, do you think? Would it be – how would the place be different? I guess what I'm getting at is, what are Utah voters – how do you describe them? People say, well, they're center-right. They're moderate-right, but they're led by more right-wing conservative. Like, how are you thinking about who they are? Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think, you know, Utah often gets classified as the most conservative state in the country, where we really are not the most conservative state in the country. We might, you know, have Republicans in all three branches of government. We might have supermajorities. We might, you know, vote number one for the Republican candidate for president every year. But that doesn't mean that we are the most conservative state in the country. And I think oftentimes LDS voters are not conservative in their values or in their views, especially when you look at issues. I mean, LDS voters on things like immigration are actually fairly moderate to liberal. And so, you know, looking at issue-based and values-based beliefs is very different than looking at our election results. And unfortunately, since we have supermajorities of the Republican Party, they get caught up in whatever the National Republican Party is doing, and they follow along. And we see that in all of our leaders. They get caught up in the national brand of Republican Party politics, and then we get seen as conservative. And the legislature right now, being a supermajority, doesn't reflect Utah. They are a monopoly that has the ability to pass whatever they want, which oftentimes is, you know, copy-paste legislation from other very Republican states and isn't actually what voters feel. I mean, you see that with the ballot initiatives that we pass statewide on issue-based things that then get torn apart at the legislature and sent to the Supreme Court. And, you know, I think if we had fair maps, which fingers crossed we're going to get soon, we'll see, you know, a lot more competition in politics. And competition is really good for voters. It's good for everyone. And so having more competitive elections means that we have more ability to talk to people, to get our message in front of voters, and then hopefully more reflective elected officials.
How do you describe one of the things that you both talked about a lot is that there is a political realignment going on in this state? Gabby, let me jump to you on that one. I can hear you on both of that, obviously. But what's the new cohort that you see developing in Utah?
Yeah, I think that's a very good question. I think when it comes to LDS voters, and you know, someone who grew up LDS, I totally get this. But I think Mormons aren't necessarily conservative. I think they are far more aligned on the libertarian ideology in a lot of ways because, you know, Mormons are very skeptical of any entity that has consolidated power. That's always kind of been the idea outside of the church, right? People don't want them, you know, you don't want to be told what to do. They want to rely on, you know, a lot of services from the church as opposed to the government. And I think right now, the Republican Party, both nationally and in Utah, I think they're overplaying their hand in this idea that they can be over-involved in people's lives. And, you know, the party of small government is no longer the Republican Party because they are out here dictating what people can and can't learn, what kind of flags they can fly, these pieces that are so far outside of what I think people used to see the Republican Party as. And, you know, as we've worked all over the state over the last, you know, 3 years, we have heard so many traditionally Republican voters tell us that they don't feel like they've left the Republican Party, but that the Republican Party has left them and that they don't feel like they have an ideological home. And so I think it is a very interesting combination of these people that no longer feel like they identify with the Republican Party broadly, the legislature overplaying their hand and kind of giving people the opening to look for something different. But we also have a lot of new people moving into the state. You know, we're the fastest growing state in the country, partially because people are moving here, but also because we have a very high birth rate here in Utah. And we know that younger people are far less interested in ideological rigidity as some of the older generations. And they have also been exposed far more to queer people, to people of color, to different ideas that maybe weren't as prominent, you know, a few decades ago. And so there is this moment that we're in where people are looking for something different because the Republican Party is not serving them. But I think as Democrats, we also have to be honest about the fact that Democrats have also not served them. And I think part of this is, one, having more competitive elections and having more Democrats that are actually out there telling voters what they stand for and what they want to do in an authentic way instead of what we tend to do as Democrats broadly across the country, which is let Republicans define who we are and I really set the table for the discussion and letting voters fill in the blanks about each individual candidate, about what they believe because of what they've been told about Democrats.
I think the other thing that we see a lot of in Utah is apathy, and especially with the younger generation, especially with Democrats in Utah, is this,
What's the point?
My vote doesn't count. Why should I even vote? It doesn't matter.
I'll just register as a Republican.
This apathy perpetuates this cycle. It continues this, you know, we've lost everything, so we're never going to win. And if we had some more competitive elections, if we had fair maps, if we had a narrative in Utah that we had competitive elections, people might actually vote, and might actually see some change because you're reducing that apathy in people who feel like their vote doesn't count. And so I don't think we've ever seen the full picture of, you know, turnout for Democrats in Utah because of that angle. And giving people some hope, we often talk about hope as a strategy. Like, you know, it's really easy to be apathetic. It's really easy to be cynical. And it's really hard to be optimistic. It's really hard to have hope, especially right now. And, you know, if we can give people hope, it could change the entire narrative, because we see more people who are inspired. That means more people are turning out. That means more elections are getting competitive, and we're electing more Democrats, and we're building more competition and breaking the monopoly. And this just continues a much bigger and better cycle than what we have now, which is just accepting defeat, letting them set the narrative, and just being on our back foot the entire time.
Yeah. How much attention are you paying to the sort of intra-party politics in the party? There was a convention, of course, state convention, and it seemed to be that there wasn't just two approaches that were presented. It seems like there were various, but it kind of seemed to amount to, we need to appeal more to moderates, be more accepting, strip out the purity tests. And the other one was maybe not a counter to that, but get rid of the old guard, lean in, be proud of who we are. And it sounds like what I'm hearing from both of you is a little bit of all of that. I mean, Brian King ends up winning. What do you think about the approach that you're hearing that was being debated at that convention?
Yeah, I think the way that it was framed broadly is not entirely accurate. I think because, you know, Brian is in his 60s. He was in the legislature for 16 years, and he's a member of the church. People assume that he's more moderate. People assume that he wants to compromise Democratic values in order to build a broader coalition. And truly, that could not be farther from the truth. As someone, you know, who has worked with him every day for the last 18 months, he is someone who is very progressive, very proud to be a Democrat, and always has been. But I also think that there, you know, people assume things about people based on their demographics or their age, but no one's out here assuming that Bernie Sanders is the old guard or the moderate, right? That's not how this works. I think it's not about age. It should be about ideology. And I think we also have to do things differently if we want to win in Utah. We cannot keep doing what we've always done, which is why we were very excited and supportive of Brian King's candidacy, because in this moment that we're in, the stakes feel very high, and they rightfully are. For us, it was, we can't take a chance. We need someone who knows how to raise money, who knows how to run an organization, who knows how to run a business, to Jackie's point, in order to actually make the progress that we need to make. Because whether you like it or not, money in politics is everything. And that is exceptionally important. And I do think it's a false choice to either stand on progressive values and to bring in more disenfranchised Republicans and independent voters. Most people are not making their determination on who to vote for based on one single issue. They're just not. And I think the more that we are internally policing, the more that we are splitting ourselves up internally, it only serves to keep more Republicans in office. And I think that you can be progressive. You can, you know, talk about the policies that we could be more likely to pass if we had more Democrats in office. But you can do that in a way that sounds authentic. And I think at the end of the day, that's what people are looking for. They're looking for authenticity, for honesty. People don't trust either party. They don't trust politicians. And we need people that sound like real people. And to us, that also means not policing people to say the exact right thing in the exact right way. Because whether it's in Utah or any other state in the country, normal people don't talk like that. That's just like not how it works. Like, we, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, Democratic Governor of Kentucky, Andy Beshear, who says, you know, he works with people every single day that, you know, have been addicted to drugs. And everyone who is an addict does not say that they have substance use disorder. They say that they're an addict. Yeah. Why are we not talking like that? Like, it makes us sound so out of touch. And if we are actually out of touch, we need to actually have a reckoning about that, because at the end of the day, we know that Democrats are actually the people that are trying to make everyone else's lives better. And what we do need to be doing is building a coalition around class consciousness and people that have money, people that don't, and people that have power, people that don't. And that is the coalition that we have to get back to, that we had when we had, to Jackie's point, you know, working class people, labor unions, like a very different kind of coalition that we have to get back to, especially in this administration where we are seeing outright corruption. We are seeing, you know, billionaires lining their pockets while working people pay the price. And that can't hold forever. We know that. And the question to me is whether or not the Democratic Party and Democratic candidates are willing to meet that moment and actually take advantage of it.
Do you think that the D matters? The Democratic Party itself. Of course it matters in terms of infrastructure, as you say. That matters immensely clearly to you. But there are some out there, like Ben McAdams, for example, who have talked about, look, we don't need to emphasize the party. Let's emphasize the ideals and let's be more willing to embrace independence and create a kind of coalitional group that can appeal to more people. Because when you add it up, you guys don't have enough Dems to win. It's just, at least not right now. So what do you think about that idea?
I think right now in the state of Utah, people vote for Republicans based on tradition. It is not a question of Republican versus Democrat or Republican versus independent. It is a question of Republican versus not Republican.
Yeah. Huh.
And, you know,
it's just a reality.
The thing you need to break is people voting for Republicans out of tradition. It's what we've always done. That's what you're going to continue to do. We have a two-party system. Whether you like it or not, it is very hard to elect someone not in this two-party system. And so, you know, right now, as our government stands, I think the D is important. And I do think we can get people to vote not for Republicans and vote for a Democrat. And that's not to say that Democratic candidates can't run away from the Democratic Party. They can differentiate themselves from Nancy Pelosi and the national Democratic brand, and especially Utah Democrats. Utah Democrats are very different than the rest of the country. And why aren't we talking about that? Why aren't we showing people what a Utah Democrat is? And I think that is a possibility. And I think we can get there. I truly believe that we can elect Democrats probably faster than we can elect independents.
How is a Utah Democrat different from a national Democrat?
You know, I think it's kind of what we've talked about. I think when we have Democratic candidates in Utah who take their, you know, P's and Q's from the National Democratic Party that's, you know, has these D.C. consultants or people in New York or California, they have the ability to talk far more about some of these more progressive issues and to, you know, really fight back against the Republicans. And in reality, they're doing the same thing that Republicans are doing by trying to create flashy moments, by trying to fundraise, by trying to, you know, raise their own name ID or whatever it is. But in reality, working in many red states, you see that Democrats in red states are very different, I think, for a few reasons. I think, one, Republicans are your neighbors, right? You can't broadly say, like, oh, the Republican Party, they're all a bunch of fascists and they're all terrible, right? Because, like, you know them and they're good people. They just vote differently than you do. I think you have to be...
Are you saying Utah Democrats are different from national Democrats in that Utah Democrats are just kind of nicer?
No, I'm saying that they have to talk...
I don't mean that in a facetious way.
No, I'm not saying that they're nicer. I'm saying that you have more exposure to Republicans and you understand where they're coming from a little bit more.
Yeah.
And
I think... You can relate to them when you're making your case.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. Or you've been there. Or you've been one.
Right.
Yeah. And I think that makes people think about things differently. And I think, too, like, Democrats in Utah feel the same way that Republicans in Utah feel about government overreach and the government telling us what to do with our lives. Like, we still have a libertarian streak out here, even on the Democratic side. And I think that, you know, we are different. We do speak differently. We not only have to in some ways for political purposes, but we don't align in the same way as a lot of the folks that are in these other states. I mean, there's no Bernie Sanders out here or AOC, you know, Democrats in elected offices out here, not because we don't, you know, maybe broadly agree on some of the same policies, but because it's culturally very different to live in a state like Utah as opposed to, you know, New York or California.
Mm-hmm. So it's just acknowledging this is a different place.
Yeah, it is. Utah loves to be different, and this is no different than that.
Gabby Finlayson and Jackie Morgan, they're founding and senior partners of Elevate Strategies. It's a local political consulting firm. We'll take another break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West.
Support for Radio West comes from listeners just like you. To donate, visit KUER.org.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking with Jackie Morgan and Gabby Finlayson. They're two political strategists who've been making this case that it's time for Utah Democrats to rethink how they see voters and the possibilities to win here. They're both Utah natives who say the party is focused too much on ideological purity and has stripped out the personality that makes a candidate relatable. They say the demographics here are changing, and Utah is just different enough that marginalized Republicans or independents could actually vote for a Democrat if the party can just dial in the right message and find the right candidates. I want to keep with the theme of you being missionaries now for a second, because there's this thing that the journalist Michael Kinsley said a long time ago, that liberals look for heretics, conservatives look for converts. Sounds like you guys wanted to switch that a little bit. Like, all right, let's ditch the purity tests. Let's find areas of common ground and people we can actually convert.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, to your point, we clearly do not have enough registered Democrats who vote Democrat every single time to be winning in places outside of where we are absolutely going to win, right? That's just the reality of the situation. And I think that if we are continuing to tell people that they are not welcome, that they are not doing the right things, if we are telling people what they should care about instead of speaking to what they do care about, who is that helping? And I think broadly, too, you know, when we give people these purity tests, it's almost always on, you know, these big social issues, you know, around immigration or, you know, trans rights or, you know, things like that, which are very important. Of course they are. But you policing people in your own party and in your own coalition only serves to harm those communities that you are claiming to help.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't even go as far as to say we're looking for converts, though. I think we're looking for people who are interested in competition, in no political monopoly in their state that controls all of government and seeing this government overreach. You know, you don't have to register as a Democrat. You don't have to vote for every single Democrat on your ballot. But giving the candidates a fair chance to actually earn your trust, earn your support, is an important part of the process, and not just voting for Republicans out of tradition.
Well, I think making sure that the Republicans that are running for office or running for re-election have to be accountable to their constituents. I mean, that's the biggest problem we have with the supermajority, is that they win at convention, they don't feel like they have to run a real campaign, and there's never a conversation about what their constituents actually want. And that lack of competition has led to corruption. It has led to not actually improving the lives of their constituents. It's led to Republicans in these districts not feeling like they're heard either on the issues that they care about. This is the conversation we have with Republicans all the time. Like, you know, we are as liberal as they come, but like, we're still capitalists. We still get it, right? Like, we're not saying that. And like, you know, economic monopolies are bad for consumers. That is just the reality. Everybody knows that. And how is a political monopoly not the same thing? It is just as bad for voters as it is for, you know, consumers.
How do you describe your social media approach? I think a lot of people will be followers of your Instagram account, for example. It's where I see you. And it's funny. It has a kind of informality to it. It can be pretty critical of lawmakers, especially during the legislative session, right? It doesn't always seem like you're a collection of moderates who are trying to get along, because you're trying to also make a very critical – like, what's your approach? What are you getting at with your social media approach, which seems to be growing a lot?
We've been working in politics for a really long time, and we've sat around looking and saying, you know, someone really needs to just talk to people. Why aren't we talking to people directly? Why can't we just tell them the honest truth? You know, what really happened is we were doing this. We were tracking bills because we needed to do it for our jobs, for helping other, you know, candidates and elected officials. And so as we built it out, people were really interested in it. And I think it came at a very opportune time that people feel so disillusioned with national politics, they're ready to get involved on a local level, but nobody is easily giving them that information. We have to communicate in the way that people are consuming media, and people are consuming media on Instagram and on TikTok and in short form videos, and it has to be fun and engaging, and it has to be interesting. We can't do all of that in politics and in the way we communicate with people on campaigns. And we'd been frustrated by seeing that on campaigns, you know, cycle after cycle. You can have the best campaign with the most amount of funding and you can talk to people for 6 months, but then it's over. And we wanted to see that long term, people consistently talking to people, consistently engaging people, but more importantly, giving people something to do, not just rage baiting people and getting them fired up about something, but telling them how to contact their legislator, getting them involved in an issue campaign, getting them involved in this referendum effort, all of these things to actually get people out to work, to make a difference, to feel like they're a part of something and build community around all of these political issues.
Yeah, and I think, too, you know, it serves two purposes. I think, one, we have heard from so many people who are, you know, liberal-leaning or progressive that have never gotten involved, that don't vote, that feel like they're the only one that feels this way. And I think having someone else say out loud what they are feeling has really and truly tangibly activated people to do more and to get involved in a way that they've never been involved before, which is good for a lot of reasons. It's excellent to have more people involved in local politics. When people know more about what is actually going on and what their elected officials are focusing on, they are more likely to change their voting habits, to, you know, make sure they're holding people accountable for what they're doing. But I think it also opens people up to something a little bit different, because people recognize Jackie and I all the time out in public. And I think having honestly, but like in
I'm sure
from Democrats and Republicans, but I think it's having a normal sounding person that is explaining something really straightforwardly about what is going on and how it's going to affect your life coming from a liberal in Utah is not a thing people have ever seen before. It is, you know, in a small way, like changing the way that people view how the Republican Party is operating and how Democrats could change things for the better.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you finally. You were talking earlier about the apathy question. You have said we need people to believe change is actually possible. Will you both just say something about that finally? The idea that because there are going to be those who have been through the ringer in Utah politics, yeah, understand that, oh, these guys are young. Mm-hmm. They're idealistic, but they're super naive. Nothing is going to change. It hasn't. We haven't had a statewide Democrat for 30 years. What do you say to that finally?
Yes, I hear you. We hear this all the time. But we all know, I think, broadly, that over the last 8 years, things have fundamentally changed in politics across the country. And so every time someone tells me, well, we tried to run a campaign in this district 20 years ago and it didn't work, so we should focus our priorities elsewhere, I am not interested in that conversation. Things have fundamentally changed. And the reason that we started our company is because we weren't seeing the type of professionalized, well-run, well-funded campaigns that we know are actually the most important piece of winning people over and to doing the work to share who these candidates are and what they want to do. And so I think, one, we are running very different types of campaigns with our candidates that are far more focused on who people are, on what they actually want to deliver for people's lives. And we're running them in a far more robust way than we've seen in the past. I don't know if you want to go into all the other reasons that we love Utah and are positive about it. But
yeah, we'll give you some of our stats that we give to people. So Utah's the youngest state in the country.
I've heard these, but keep going. Yeah, they're great.
We'll give it to. We're the youngest state in the country. We're the fastest growing state in the country. We are the most college educated red state in the country. There are three states that are more urbanized than they are rural that are still red. Those are Tennessee, Texas, and Utah. Utah is the far easiest of those three to be able to make a difference in. 24 out of the 29 counties in Utah swung away from the GOP between 2012 and 2016. And in places like Provo, we have seen shifts swinging from 52 points towards Democrats in the last 10 years.
20 years. Yeah.
20 years. Mm-hmm. LDS voters, especially young LDS voters, are the largest shifting voting block to the left of any other voting block. And, you know, we can give you all these facts and we can talk about all these changes, but it's not going to change because the demographics are changing. We have to do the work to change it. And that's the thing that I think is the hardest thing to do. You know, people might be a little apathetic, but they're also tired and they're confused and We need people that are giving them something to be excited about, something to believe in, a future that looks good, something that they can feel inspired to vote for, some little bit of hope. If that means that we're out here, you know, being naive and optimistic and continuing to beat that drum, we're going to keep doing it until it happens because, you know, that's the only way we're going to be able to get people on board. We have to get people to follow us into the fight and then go into the fight. And we're ready to do that.
Yeah. And I think the other thing that we will tell you, you know, taking off our influencer hat, you know, as strategists, we do this work all the time. And what we know psychologically is that the most effective way to get someone to turn out to vote and to vote for a certain candidate is social pressure. Do they feel like they're picking a winner? Do they feel like other people on their street are voting and they're going to miss out on it? Do they feel like they're a part of something bigger than themselves, right? And we haven't seen that same energy from a Democrat since, I would argue, 2012 from you know, the Obama campaign. And it's not just that we want people to believe in something that is never going to happen, to feel better about themselves or to feel like, you know, they are excited or hopeful. It's, you know, as Jackie said, hope is a strategy for that reason, for the reason that we know that when people believe something is competitive, it becomes competitive. It is not, you know, the other way around. And so getting people to understand that this is very important and that, you know, everyone is voting and that, you know, people actually like this Democrat. That's amazing. Like, that's not naivety. That's strategic.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's Gabby Finlayson and Jackie Morgan. They're senior partners of the political consulting firm Elevate Strategies. You can find them on Instagram and TikTok at Elevate_Utah. Radio West is a production of KUER. You can subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. We're on YouTube at KUER90.1. We're on Instagram at Radio West. You can email us at radiowest@kuer.org. The program is produced by Benjamin Bombard and Tim Slover. Carrie Watson is our executive producer. I'm Doug Fabrizio.